Until recently, many scientists believed that they could only predict an El Niño condition 3 seasons in advance at best. This week, new research is creating a paradigm shift in El Niño predictability up to 3 years in advance, along with a change in thinking about exactly how it happens. The study is in Tuesday's online issue of Nature Communications. UH Manoa Professor of Oceanography Axel Timmerman is the co-author, and he's back in the studio with us now. Thank you for coming back.
Good morning, Beth Ann. It's a pleasure, as always.
Good morning. Looking at an El Niño situation, I mean, people hear that term all the time, but do a lot of people really understand what El Niño years really are all about, what causes them, and the fact that they're just not one-size-fits-all El Niño?
So there are two types of El Niño. We call them flavors. There is the Eastern Pacific El Niño, so the Eastern Equatorial Pacific warms up. This is the classical El Niño that everybody is studying pretty much, and that's the one that's causing the impact in Hawaii, in California, along the South American coast, and so on. There is a second flavor of El Niño, which was discovered maybe 10 years ago. It's called El Niño Modoki, and Modoki is the Japanese word for similar but different, so very zen-like. And this Modoki flavor happens more in the Central Pacific, and because the atmosphere responds to where the main warming is located in the Pacific, the impacts are more directed towards the west, so towards Australia and towards Indonesia. And our study found that this second flavor, this El Niño Modoki flavor, has a long predictability, up to 3 years, as you said. And the predictability, the memory in the system is not in the Pacific itself, which is a little bit counterintuitive, but it's in the Atlantic. So the Atlantic plays a major role in driving global sea level pressure and wind changes that have an effect on the tropical Pacific, the Central Pacific, and that's how the low frequency, the slow variations in this mode can come about that we can predict with climate models.
It used to be that everyone looked to the Pacific, that it was the big driver. You know, you've got to see what's happening with the Pacific to see if you're going to have an El Niño year or not. That seems to be not what's coming out of this research, that it's maybe not as important as once was thought.
Right. Think about it as an orchestra with many different players, and of course, the Pacific is the string section, so really providing a big backbone for the climate orchestra there. But there are other players, and the Atlantic and also the Indian Ocean have been identified in the last years as important players, in particular for the slow changes that we are seeing. And one of the examples is the recent intensification of the trade winds from the 1990s all the way to 2013. The equatorial trade winds have intensified, piling up huge amounts of warm water in the Western Pacific. That's a sea level rise that caused island inundations in the West Pacific. And that was wind-driven. Only a quarter or a third of it was due to global warming. So the sea level rise in that area is wind-driven. And that was also initiated by the Atlantic warming that happened at the same time. Furthermore, the same trade winds cooled the Eastern Pacific, and that was the reason for the so-called global warming hiatus, the fact that the temperatures stalled, the global mean temperatures stalled, because everywhere else it was warming, but the Eastern Pacific was cooling because of these trade winds intensifying. And the cooling in this area has also caused the California drought. But without the Atlantic warming, we would not have had this cooling in the Eastern Pacific. So what we see is really this connection between all the ocean basins. Every player has an important role, but in particular on these decadal scale variations, we have to put them all together.
Axel Timmerman, why did it take so long for us to realize that the Indian Ocean and the Atlantic were not just bit players, but really significant players?
Well, I think it's very much the perspective of climate scientists. They have their favorite ocean basin that they know very well, and it's a little bit of a pigeonhole perspective.
Myopically driven only on the Pacific.
Yes, and in particular, interannual variability. So thinking about the typical El Niño, you don't need the other ocean basins for that necessarily. But looking at this Central Pacific El Niño, which is more low frequency, so it has slower variations. We need the Atlantic for that. And I think we are opening our horizons right now to look at the global teleconnectivity of these ocean basins.
I mean, that seems to be really what this is pointing to, is that what we've maybe known intuitively, we're all connected, the oceans flow, I mean, there's no line of demarcation, this is the beginning of this, and that's the... All of that has to be shown in practice and not just in principle. So what do we take away from this in terms of how policy is driven? Because most of this is meant to protect lives.
Yeah, so it's very interesting, this three-year prediction horizon that we have identified for this particular flavor of El Nino, which is very relevant, is, of course, a similar timescale as decision makers would like to see climate prediction to operate on. So in particular in Australia, I think this is going to be very relevant. Predictions, climate predictions 3 years ahead means that you can really start acting and planning and acting, and not acting randomly. So I think this is a new horizon for climate scientists really to provide relevant information to policymakers.
And the effect on Hawaii?
The effect on Hawaii, the El Niño-Modoki has relatively weak influences on Hawaii. As I said, it's more in the Western Hemisphere. But right now, for example, we are in an El Niño-Modoki state, and the climate models suggest that over the next months, this will become a classical El Niño state, so with an eastern Pacific warming, and that will have ramifications for Hawaii, and in particular, the climate models suggest that it's going to get wetter in summer in Hawaii and drier most likely than in the following winter.
And again, making the point that it really truly is all tied together.
Yes, it is all tied together, and as I said, the El Niño that's going to develop over this year, the eastern Pacific El Niño, that's going to have an effect on the drought conditions in California, most likely triggering an end to the very severe drought that they had.
And that will be a very welcome relief.
Yeah. But this is all based on current climate models, and these climate models didn't do very well last year in terms of the predictions. So we are a little bit more careful this year because of the bust of the predictions last year.
So we'll when we see the rain, we'll believe it. And
yes.
Until that time happens,
well,
be
not
a little
only the
more
rain.
Circumspect, truly, about the climate modeling.
So the warming in the eastern equatorial Pacific is about to occur very soon, so in the next couple of months. And I think then we have a very clear sign and evidence for the emerging El Niño and its impacts.
All right, we'll be able to talk to you more then. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Axel Timmerman is a UH Manoa professor of oceanography. He's also the leader of the UH Manoa International Pacific Research Center's Paleoclimate Research Unit, and he's the co-author of the recent Climate Predictability Report.